Hello and welcome to Echoes of Glory, Season 8, Episode 11. I'm Jack.
I'm ASD.
And we're going to go straight into it, because we've got loads to cover. So in advance of the launch at the end of the month of the Spurs shirt, the story of the famous Tottenham colours told through a unique collection of historic match-worn shirts, we want to talk about your favourite Tottenham kit.
Yeah, I mean, we're not being paid to promote this book. It's just a big book that we're all really excited for, and obviously we've got some connections to it on the pod, but we are not being paid to promote this book. Our favourite
kit... That's a nice new watch you've got there.
when you sent around the agenda, I went, 91 kit. I love the 91 kit. I love it. Umbro, Holston. But it's more about the memories that I saw in the kit, and that's what all my research has come down to. Because
the kit first of all for anyone that doesn't know.
It's
how's
really
the best
simple.
Way?
It's simple. Do you remember West Ham's kit from a few seasons ago? Had that bit where it was a bit shiny, patterned.
Yeah,
it was like that. Like you get really. Do you remember? There's that picture of me from the last game of the season. Years ago, where there's a 360
sniffing yourself. Yeah. So it's the best photo ever.
So the year before we left White Hart Lane, dear listeners, they put a camera in the middle of the pitch at White Hart Lane. They did a 360 picture in between the players going off and then them coming back out and doing the walk around the White Hart Lane. So I stand up, I'm sort of not posing, but I'm not posing, waiting for that picture.
And they didn't tell us when they were taking it.
No,
either.
It was there for like half an hour. But I'm wearing my yellow, I think it's, that one's Sheringham, the yellow one with the purple splodge on the top. I love that kit. I love it. It's authentic, but it's made out of, basically, it's like a bin bag. You just sweat. And I thought I smelled a bit funky, so I lifted my arms and smelled my armpit, and it's that exact moment that you see on the
It's incredible. So I'm not even in the photo. I went to the toilet. Not even in it. I'm not even in it, which is brilliant.
But the point is, It was basically made of plastic. It was like that. It was really shiny. It's white. It looks quite clean cut. It's a lovely, lovely kit. Lovely collar. Lovely, like, Umbro. A lovely sponsor. But I remember, you know, Gazza's free kicking it. Lineker scoring in the final. All that sort of stuff.
So it's always the memories that you associate with the kit, as opposed to the kit being really nice. Because actually, when I asked this question, I'm thinking about it myself. It's not even a nice kit, but some of my best memories, especially when I was younger, when we had that horrible tight Kappa Thompson kit.
Was it thick
kit.
Blue under the arms?
Awful
Edgar
kit.
Davids,
yeah.
Nido.
And it's like, when I was a youngster going and watching the games, like, that was the first time, that was when I really remember falling in love with Spurs. Like, actually remembering going consistently. It's a dreadful kit, but I love it, because whenever I see it, I think of Robbie Keane doing cartwheels, 22 Keane on the back. Like, that's the era.
There's not many like that. The German one from the 90s World Cup, you know, the classic one with the line that goes across the chest, that's a beautiful kit. There's not many actually beautiful kits that we've had, you know. The I always, going back to the memories one, like the Champions League, the first year Champions League kit, I love that kit, but that was because you saw Modric in it,
that's
Van der Vaart, Bale in it. I can't picture a kit without a player in it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so even the one that everybody hated with the yellow underneath the arm, that I always associate with Palacios, I still kind of loved it because we had Modric playing in it, and I see goals scored in that kit. That Liverpool, we played in that one, I think Liverpool first game of the season when Benny hit it.
I think of Eunice Kabul when I think of that kit as well.
That's what it is.
Which says it all, isn't it?
Yeah.
The two kits I like as well that are standards and a little bit different are the 125th year anniversary one, which is split down the middle, white and blue.
4-4
against Villa, but again, that game is why I love that kit. I love it. Incredible. 4-1 down against Villa.
Yeah.
They're all chanting happy birthday to you.
Yeah.
Really, really going for us, and we fight back, and Kabul scores in the last minute. And the kit we had a few years ago, which was again split down the middle, and it was like black and silver. It was the Bale.
Yeah.
I really liked that kit. It's not really a Spurs kit, but
that
I really
makes
liked
you look
it.
So buff.
I really
I've got two
liked
of them.
It.
It makes you look so muscular.
And that's like Lewis Holtby, isn't it? It's that.
Bale. It's just Bale scoring against West Ham, 25th of February 2013. Yeah. I love the one, the last one of the lane with just the block of. What I was going to ask you is, what things does a Spurs kit have to be, and what is it not allowed to be? Because we've had a brown kit, I've got one of those. You know, are we allowed brown kits? Are we allowed yellow?
Well, that's the thing, because people are always like, oh, it's not a Spurs colour. But I quite like the third kit being a bit of a roguish. It's not really a Spurs. But that's, I know. people listening to this will think home white, away blue, third yellow is probably what most people will think.
Yeah.
And I get that, but I like it when a kit's a little bit out there. Like that brown one, I loved it. Yeah. Looking back on it, it's not that great.
It's the ugliest kit ever.
But it's just a little bit different. Didi Azakora. It's what you were saying, you always think of someone.
What do you think about this, the green one?
I like the green one. I first saw the green one, I thought, what is that?
Yeah.
I thought, honestly, if they designed that in the dark, what has gone on? But actually, when I saw it actually in the flesh, I quite liked it. And a lot of the kits the last couple of seasons have been a bit like that.
Yeah.
You see the release and you think, oh, I'm not sure. And then you see it in real life and you're like, I love it.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
So I quite like the green one. To be honest, I don't really buy the kits anymore.
No.
Because it's just a price point for me. I'm like, I'm not going to... That's a game.
Yeah.
And I'd much rather go to a game than have the kit.
It's a week shopping.
Yeah.
It's a tank full of petrol.
I tend to buy the training gear.
Yeah, yeah.
Which this season, actually, we've got that lovely dark purple training gear.
You're not talking about that, like Windows 95 background, the horrible one. No.
So I think that's really nice. But what I like about this is some people love kits, some people hate kits, but there's always a story behind each one. That's what I really like. So obviously I asked Stata about this because he's involved in the book. Never heard of him. So he actually said he spoke to Simon Shakeshaft, who's the author of that book.
Yeah.
And he said that the greatest period of Spurs shirts for him is 1975 to 1993, with Lecoq Sportif shirts especially standing out, with the centenary 82-83 set of three being the best of all. That includes the one-off yellow strip for the Bristol Rovers centenary match the same season. He loves his kits, doesn't he? I thought I've got to speak to him before
we do this.
I'll put this out on social media as well, and a mix of responses. Some kits that actually, when I read the year, I couldn't pitch them, but then when you go and research, you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So G Phillips 5 on Reddit, it said 1988 away. It was the first kit he ever owned and was beautiful. So again, it's the personal story, isn't it, between the two. So that was one. I was like, 1988? I've got no idea.
You're looking it up as we speak?
Looking it up as we speak.
I like that, the old blue one that says Spurs in letters across the top. Like, some people really, really hate that. I also love the purple Klinsmann one, you know.
So that's the Holston.
Oh, yeah. Hummel, like, so you've got black lines going from underneath your arm
collar.
To collar, V-neck, Holston in big. Yeah, we're having that.
Yeah, that's a nice kit. Fernie Ads on Reddit says the purple Kappa kit. Fernie Ads.
Oh.
easy. The purple Kappa kit, easily my favourite kit, so comfy.
Yeah, well, they ran out. The whole point of the Kappa kits was they were meant to really show when your shirt was being tugged. But didn't they ran out of XXL in this because they did fit tight, so everyone was big lad.
Everyone was at least a size up. Black Curtis on Reddit says the kit I always think back to was the 97-98 away kit, which if I recall wasn't so loved by others. I love the blend of navy blue and the golden HP sponsor. Finbin on Reddit says 99-2001 Adidas home kit with Holston after our dodgy pony period.
It's
great to have a
blue?
Decent manufacturer in Holston.
Yellow and blue away. So I've got that in a kid size. My dad got it from a charity shop. So
amazing. And that one was also the first kit that Ledley King wore. So if you look at old pictures, he looks so baggy, doesn't he?
He literally
looks like a gust of wind's going to blow him over.
I miss the baggy shirts and amazing. The curtains. You know?
And like the really nap. Short shorts.
It's
brilliant. Other people. So Cole Woodbridge on Facebook, friend of the show, Cole said he's actually written in with three. So 1978 Admiral Home as number one, 1970 Plain White number two, and then 1991 Umbro Home number two. So 91, the early 90s actually
that
is quite
FA
a popular
Cup,
period.
Though, isn't it? Beating Arsenal and beating Forest was next level.
Yeah, it's not bad, is it? And Javad on Facebook as well. any kit that closely resembles the 60-61 kit, the less the better. Which is just the badge. It's got 61 Wembley for the cup final underneath.
Yeah.
That's a stunning kit.
So the year after the Champions League one, do you remember the one we had, which had like a floppy? It was all white, totally white, floppy collar. Who made it? Was it Puma again?
Yeah,
and it was Autonomy.
Autonomy.
And that I was looking at it. It looks like there's something missing from it. Yeah. I like a feature. I hated the seatbelt one from a few seasons ago.
I didn't mind the seatbelt one actually.
And I hate this season's home kit. I think it's awful.
I think the away one, the blue one, I think is nice. I like the green one.
Love the green one.
The home one is... I can't really say I've been massively inspired to buy a shirt for a long time. I always look back at shirts and think, I love that shirt because of my memories. I can't remember one coming out and being like, I've got to go and get that.
The one they pulled when they changed the sponsor for the Champions League kit, do you remember when they did that?
Yeah.
So I've got a Bale Champions League kit, which is great. But they ran out of them, so I've got an XL and it looks ridiculous on me.
But, I mean, there have been some great kits over the years. At the moment, you look in the current day across all of the top flight football, all the kits are the same. Nike have a template.
Yeah.
This is the kit, this is the badge. I'll copy and paste that on there. There's the kit, churn it out. So it's a bit uninspiring a lot of the time.
Have you seen the PSG away Champions League kit? Which is PSG X crossed with Jordan.
Jordan. So
it's
yeah.
the Jordan brand one. Yeah. I'm not about that. Jordan is an American, very... But it's basketball. It's got nothing to do with
who we are.
You know
what? I quite like it. It's something a little bit different.
I'm not having it.
I mean, I think for some people, shirts are a big deal, aren't they? I'm not really that bothered about what we're wearing. As long as we're getting the results, I'm not as bothered. But
cool.
I like that. Anything a little bit different, I think, is pretty good. There was a really comfortable, calm game at the weekend where stress levels were relatively low for the first 65 minutes anyway, when we played Wolves. We were great for that
really
first hour.
Good.
I mean, first 10-15 minutes was pretty even. They come out and had a go, but we handled it fairly well. Took our goals fantastically. The first goal from Lamella, lovely bit of play from Sun to feed him. Great finish from Lamella. Goal scoring form at the minute is incredible. Then the second goal, a couple of minutes later, Trippier gets a bit of time. Perfect delivery. Unbelievable delivery. And Lucas Moura leaps at the back post. He reminds me so much of Tim Cahill. Because
really?
For a little guy, he wins so many headers. He's 5'5", 5'6".
Is he?
He's got an incredible leap on him,
Lucas
Moura.
Big head.
Big head. Really
lots
big
away,
head. He took his goal lovely.
Sniper's dream, we'll call him.
Excellent. And then Kane in the second half goes through, kick makes a good save, smashes the rebound. At 3-0, I was thinking this could be a real annihilation. And then just a moment of madness from Trippier.
I blame Trippier for both of them. Like, both of them.
See, I think Trippier contributed definitely. Like, you can't question that. But there are a lot of other mistakes because I know people were sort of... Well, let's talk about the first one. So Trippier's got the ball. He's got a little bit of pressure on him, but he's got more than enough time to just clip the ball up the line or put it into touch, either one.
Yeah.
Tries to be clever and nutmeg the centre-forward in his own box, just outside his own box, which is schoolboy. Like, if you're under nines, Tim, that you'd go crazy. Gives the ball away, Foyth dives, lunges in, when actually he didn't need to make that challenge.
Yeah.
That's a young centre-half... Poor decision making.
Yeah.
So Trippier, yes. Foyth, yes. I think they're, for me and that goal, they're both equally at fault.
Yeah, Trippier was in control of the situation and forced Foyth into making a decision. So Foyth shouldn't have done what he did. He should have stayed at his feet, all of that. But Trippier, like when Pochettino came out, hasn't he? He said he needs to, Trippier needs to remember he's a right back. And all I can hear is like Alan Hansen in the Match of the Day studio and going, the one thing you don't want your right back to do at this stage is to try and nutmeg a defender back towards his own goal. Ridiculous. Like, like there's no explaining that decision.
On the flip side, is that the sign of a player that is full with confidence? To even try that, I know that I'm not justifying what he's done, but to even contemplate that the right decision for me to do is to nutmeg a striker, you've got to be, do you know what I mean, thinking you're the best player in the world to do that.
It's what is he confident in? Is it confident in his own ability? Is he confident in his position further up the pitch? Like, yes, but then that's worrying in that that's not his job and he shouldn't be confident doing that, you know?
The funny thing with that is it's shocking defending, so that's my opinion on he shouldn't have done what he did. If that comes, if he nutmegs that forward and it goes to the centre-half, everyone's going, what a bit of play that was.
No.
The composure for him to do that and the awareness, unbelievable.
I'm not sure. We'd still be saying he shouldn't be nutmegging
people. I don't know, I think
there'd
be a lot of people saying, what a brilliant bit of play.
Oh, no, I'm not having it.
Foyth goes in, doesn't he, and gives the pen away. So that's 3-1. And that was the classic, oh, here we go, Spurs. But you're still two goals in, we were still comfortable at that point.
Yeah.
The second one is... some of the worst defending that you'll see at any level of football. Firstly, Harry Winks has the ball, no pressure, gives it away sloppy. I didn't actually think he had a great game, Winks. I love him, but I thought he gave the ball away a lot. Normally, he's so productive with it, and he just recycles possession over and over and over, never gives it away, gives it easy. I thought he gave the ball away quite a lot in that game. They did get around him quite well, but I didn't think it was one of his better ones. But that's fine, he's a young player as well, I get that. So he gives it away. Trippier is nowhere. Like, it doesn't go with his man, doesn't really do anything, he's just in a horrible position.
Yeah.
But I think, again, at that point, Foyth has that under relative control. He doesn't need to dive in. What he needs to say in that situation, and this is what's hard for defenders, he's got to accept he can't get the ball. Yeah. And he's got to think, okay, you're going to get the ball first and you're going to be in my penalty area with the ball. Yeah. I'm going to get goal side here. And I'm going to make you have to beat me, Ben one in the top corner, a moment of magic. Yeah. That's what he should do. He should, but he's a young centre-half. He thinks, I've got to get to that ball if I don't get to it.
Yeah.
And he throws himself into... It's really, really poor defending.
This isn't Ledley versus Robin where you have to make a last-ditch tackle. It is, you shepherd him out. And it's you're right, it's a lack of experience. He's got enough strength just to push him out into a place where Wolves don't want to be. Then you get your back up and then everything's fine.
And even though he's got a yard on him, the forward, even if he just stays alongside him and puts a bit of pressure, he still has to beat the keeper.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And Hugo's shot-stopping, as we've always said on this, is second to none.
Yeah.
So it's going to take a good finish. And if he does do that, you can't really have a go at Foyth. Mm. You can sort of say, well, what's happened before that?
Yeah.
So it was a really naive bit of play. And after that, he's headed completely gone, Foyth.
Yeah,
he'd actually, up until that point, had a pretty good game.
Yeah, it's a shame it's literally, you could add both decisions up to 1 second of stupidity cumulatively and suddenly it's ruined him.
Yeah.
Like, he had a great game against West Ham. Yeah. Really, really good. Just meant, luckily we were 3-0 up. I'm not too worried about him. Like, he would have learned way more from that than making those two tackles.
Yeah.
Winks is my new favourite player. I think, honestly, I genuinely believe he could be world class.
Yeah,
and when I say
tidy.
World class, like top 11 players in the world. Like, he sees the player. And he sees the play, sees the pitch like no player we've got. Mm. I think he's brilliant. Like, even if you go back to Real Madrid, which was a year ago Friday, I think, like, he makes the breakaway goal, I think, the third goal, by taking a second where most other people clear it. He takes a second and passes it out to Dele, who then has the time to turn his man. And honestly, Winks, I'm so excited to see what Winks can do. I would get rid of Dembele.
Well, we didn't talk about his injury actually, because he went off after about 90 seconds, which was a big blow. And that, you could sort of see that we changed our complete game plan with that, and he chucked someone and just sort of said, okay, we'll just sort of go for it now. That's what I'm going to do. I'm a big Winks fan. Like I said, I didn't think he was great against Wolves.
No.
I thought Sissoko had another good game.
I think we're seeing the coming of the age of Sissoko. I think for the right game, he's the right player. Like, West Ham is perfect for. And if you need just a muscular presence to say, don't shoot, never shoot, but just be a busybody. Yeah. What we expect of Dembele now, really, we can expect from him, not the ghosting past players, no one can do that, but that bustling strength. Like, really, I feel like we've lost Wanyama. Wanyama of two seasons ago, who was an absolute monster. And we've lost Dembele because he's too old and too injured now. Those two can't play as much anymore. Mm. So Sissoko has to step up, and he is.
Wanyama's a worry for me, to be honest, because I've always questioned his ability with the ball.
Yeah.
Without it, breaking play up, fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. But my thing with that is, for Tottenham, a side that are going to want to go and win the title, is having a midfielder that just breaks play up enough. I don't think it is. I think you need to have that as your game, brilliant, but you need to be productive with the ball. And injuries is a real, it's really hurt Wanyama, the injuries, because he hasn't had a run of games for way over a year, which is a shame.
We've always said, like, Pochettino likes players who can do multiple things, and the Spurs of the Champions League were players who could do one thing. We'll talk about Rafa.
Yeah.
Rafa was severely limited in his speed and athleticism and fitness, but he had a couple of amazing skills. Defoe was really good at a couple of things, and that's what Wanyama is. He's not the Spurs that we've currently got, and that's the worry.
But we saw the game out against Wolves, which was the main thing. You know, but
I was never in doubt.
If there'd have been another 10 minutes,
you reckon?
They didn't create much clear cut. I know Loris made a couple of good saves throughout the course of the game, but at 3-2, I liked when he chucked Sanchez on and he identified, okay, this is what's going on. I need another second body in there.
Love that.
He looked all over the place, Sanchez, though, when he came on. He really did. But centre half's hard coming into a game when you're last ditch defending.
I was really looking forward to this game. Wolves are really exciting.
Good
to
side.
Me. You know, good side. Great players. Good, decent crowd. Like, it's a proper game of football.
Yeah.
They're not going to sit there and defend. Yeah. They are going to play football, and I love that.
But we got over the line. You know, that's the main thing. We've played 3 games in 6 days, and we've won them all.
City on Monday.
Oh, we lost that.
Yeah.
But we've had no publicity, have we, about the amount of games? There's not been any talk about it, when actually, you know, that's pretty crazy to have that many games and to rotate, and it shows how good our squad actually is. And if you'd have offered me 3-2 before the game started, I'd have put your hand up for that. So that's great.
We're fourth.
The only thing that worries me a little bit this season is just defensively, we don't look that great.
Isn't it?
And interestingly, we've still got, stats-wise, goals conceded, I think the third or the fourth best defence in the league.
It's weird.
But I don't watch us with that same security of, they're not scoring today, no way. I watch it thinking they'll probably get one. Even though they're not, and we've probably kept more clean sheets than I think we have this season. I just don't feel the same sense of...
Are you team bring back AVB? Is that...
Anyone other than that, man.
Really? Harry, over AVB?
Oh, I would rather have Redknapp than AVB. 100%.
Sherwood,
100%.
Over AVB.
Oh, not tactics, Tim. Oh. Not. You've got to draw the line somewhere, and that line is a gilet, isn't it, let's be honest. So Van der Vaart has announced this week his retirement from football.
Yeah.
Anyone that listens to the show regularly or has done for a number of years knows that he's one of my favourite players. I absolutely loved watching him. Big moments in big games, that was what he was all about. There's always been something for me watching a player that isn't blessed physically, that isn't quick, isn't strong, but yet can do whatever he wants with the ball. There's something magical about it. Fantastic player. The goals against Arsenal that he used to score, the way he used to give it as well in the big games, I love that. I remember the goal he scored, equaliser against Arsenal at the Lane, went straight to the Arsenal fans. No, this was in the 3-3 when he scored the first one. So we went 1-0.
He's being dragged back. And he
smashes it
with his right foot though, which I never saw. I didn't even think he had a right foot.
And he goes straight to the Arsenal fans, giving it. The penalty in the away game when we've won 3-2 and came back. All the goals in the Champions League he used to score for us as well. He got a hat trick, didn't he? I think it was a hat trick against FC 20 in the Champions League. Like
him and Crouch were a perfect combination. Because I watched his 28 goals for us. It was Crouch knocked down to Van der Vaart all the time. Yeah. And he loved scoring against Villa.
Oh.
And I think he goal hung. The negatives, let's cover the negatives as well. He couldn't run. He could not run.
60 minutes maximum.
Him, 60 minutes maximum. Couldn't run. He was basically Clint Dempsey, just a better Clint Dempsey. He was an equally annoying. I mean, his personal life, we know what happened on with... He hit his missus in a private party. But I didn't know this. She had been having an affair beforehand with a pilot.
It's all messy.
He's now happy with a handball player. They've had a baby last July. Like, I can't. I've had this discussion with my dad about like music. How much can you separate the behaviour of the artist and their actual music? Mm. So, like, I'm massive. Personally, like, cheating is a really big thing for me. I'm not into it at all.
I thought you were going to say massive. Like, I love it. Like, no, I can't hear it.
I hate it. Like, there's just something weird in me that just I really passionately hate it. Mm. And my favourite band, my favourite artist ever is The Clash. Joe Strummer apparently had affairs and all this. And you go, how much can I separate those two? Because it's the man who made the music. And it's the same with him. Like, he punched his missus, admittedly, after he left Tottenham. So that was free. And his missus, who was very ill, like she'd had cancer, like survived it and then it came back. And where do we stand on that? So we're not going to answer that now. So aside from that, he loved Tottenham. The two things I loved, he loved playing for Tottenham. Like, he really loved playing for Tottenham. I loved it when he hugged that granny. Do you remember that? Was that the Inter guy? No, that was... It was just he just goes and finds an old woman in the crowd. And then the other thing was, he felt proper Tottenham, like a flawed genius. And what we don't have anyone like him who where you go and when him and Bale and Modric, you expected something special to happen. We don't really have those players. Like, even Kane, we don't expect something special. We just expect consistency from all of them.
I think it defines historically what Tottenham's all about.
That's it.
Isn't it? Like, probably not the most consistent player in the world, but we give you moments where you think, what have I just seen? Yeah. That's an incredible bit of football that I'll never forget.
Stylish, man. Just style all day long.
I loved him. And after he left, didn't he come out and said, I left Spurs too soon. It was the best period of my career. Yeah. Like, I loved London. It was the best football I was ever playing.
Do you remember when we signed him? It was mad. It was
Deadline day,
a couple of hours before. And it was just... We put a cheeky bid in, literally a cheeky bid, and then he arrived.
Because he was meant to have gone to Bayern Munich the week before for about 35 million, and it fell through for personal terms. Madrid just wanted to ship him out because they had too many players, and we got him for about 12 million, didn't we?
According to Wikipedia. My favourite Spurs player chant as well. No, 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 no. Absolutely.
What you were saying about him at Villa as well, because I've got to give this a mention. He scored 4 goals in 2 games against Villa in the same season. The 2 home goals are literally knockdowns from Crouch. One is literally on the line and taps it in. And the other one, he dummies Richard Dunn, who goes flying across him and then puts it in the other corner. And then in the away game, which was a Boxing Day match at Villa Park, I was there. We went up on Boxing Day, snow on the ground, drove up there. We battered them first 15 minutes. He scores a lovely goal. Luka Modric picks the ball up just inside the Villa half, plays a 30-40-yard ball out to the right. Alan Hutton's making an overlapping run, gets to the byline, cuts it back, penalty spot. Van der Vaart runs onto it, bottom corner. We've gone mental in the way and naturally celebrating, chanting, doing the song, all of that. We were destroying them. Long ball goes forward. Defoe goes up for a challenge with James. I think it's James Collins. Collins goes down, red card. So everyone was like, what's gone on there? So now you're thinking, and this is when Villa were a decent team. They were sort of 7th, 8th. So now you're 1-0 up, 10 men. You're thinking, oh, right, we're going to be hanging on now. And we did a lot of defending for large periods of that game. Got into the second half, about 65, 70 minutes. Bale picks the ball up, really in the right back position, runs the length of the pitch, squares it to Lennon, who's just now just inside the penalty area on the left hand side. He lays it off to Van der Vaart, who'd been making a run but couldn't keep up with Bale, tucks it in the bottom corner, right in front of where we were. We went absolutely crazy. It was 2-1 in the end and we held on, but for 10 men, as one of my favourite away games, the whole family out in as well, it was absolutely brilliant.
What I did notice is he had a left. He passed the ball into a net and he never hit it harder than it needed to be hit. Like, there's so many goals where he hits it left-footed, diagonally across the box into the bottom right-hand corner, and you go like, someone should have blocked that, and it just doesn't. Unbelievable player.
Do you remember
really
a great goal he scored against Swansea at home? He beat him 3-1.
Is it the one where someone? I think it's Ledley King shoots and it basically comes to his feet.
And he just and it, the keeper doesn't move. He does a keeper with his eyes and bends it in the top corner.
I was there for that.
Brilliant player. Great. So
it just brings a smile to your
face. Hopefully we'll see him back at Spurs in some capacity. That'll be amazing.
Let's get him on the pod.
Even if he's doing it, Rafa, if you're listening, let us know next week. There were some comments made in the week as well from Gary Neville about Spurs in the last 30 years, basically saying that they're a spineless team, not a lot of bottle, were soft. And Harry Redknapp took personal offence to that and was kicking off on TalkSport about it. What did you make of Gary Neville's comments, firstly?
It's a really interesting one. And I think that, I mean, I don't know what authority he's got. He was part of the greatest team that's ever lived, under the greatest manager that's ever lived. So he's got one very biased point of view, and then he's a failed manager. His sister is a world champion, and what she does, he's a failed manager. That aside, he's a very good analyst.
And great obviously, player.
He a great player, performed at the highest level, so he has got something about him. I firmly believe that there is a style, or there is a heart of a club where they play a certain way. And you have a look at Arsenal under Wenger, they focused on playing beautiful football, but they did not have the steel after they left all those French invincibles. They did not have steel. And you have a look at West Ham, they play bruising, not like Stoke. A little bit of football, but they've got heritage in there. And we've got exactly the same thing. We are about style, we're about... There is a Spursy element
playing
to
with
us.
A flourish.
Playing with a flourish, and that means we're not consistent. Like Chelsea, since Abramovich, have always been just about killing the game.
Pragmatic football.
And he's not wrong. Like, you have a look at our results. It's terrible. How many cups have we won in the last 30 years? Minimal.
I think his comments probably are fairly accurate, but I think they were out of order, including Harry in that, because I think Harry... a little bit Martignol, but mainly Harry. That was the beginning of the change.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't like Redknapp and give him a lot of stick. I thought he was brilliant for us, and I loved that period, going and watching brilliant football every week. The current team's much better manager now. Everything about us now is better. But that period, for me as a fan, that was the best I'd ever seen. So I'll always hold Redknapp in high regard, so I'll never have a bad word to say about him. So I think it was out of order for Neville to include that, because if you look at what Redknapp did for us, it was a pretty good job.
What did we win under Redknapp?
Yeah, but it depends what you... going by that, are you saying that Ramos was a more successful manager than Redknapp at Spurs? So it's difficult, isn't it? Because some people would say it's all about the trophies, but that was the beginning of the progression.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's all about the trophies. It is about... Ultimately, we failed.
We failed to win anything.
And it, like, if you go back and look at the games after the Champions League, we had some shocking performances.
Oh yeah.
And same with the Europa League afterwards under Redknapp. So that's a spine. He's been able to. It's consistency is what he's saying. Yeah. And he's seen games through. It's not playing for 70 minutes. It's not playing for 70% of the season. And so I think it's fair.
I think the way that he went about it was, yeah, just not. It's just, it should have probably just fought. You know, it's quite a disappointment. And Redknapp's one of, you know, England's most successful managers. He's had a fantastic career in management. Say what you like about him, but like what he did at Spurs and what he's done at other clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been fantastic. And when Neville then is coming out comparing win percentages to when Redknapp was at QPR and stuff like that, it's
ridiculous.
Yeah, it's stupid. But
let's not forget as well, like there's a media aspect to this. The Redknapps, and Jamie and his dad own the Sun. Like, they don't own, but they're in the Sun. They're on Sky. So that was a stupid move for Neville to make as a Sky employee. But also, like, Neville, he can't go on and just go, Spurs were all right. He has to have a strong point of view just to get viewers. Yeah. And the fact that we're talking about it. So he's all also playing the monkey for the Sky organ grinder. So I'm not too worried about it.
We've got two games to preview as well. So we've got PSV tomorrow night.
Massive game.
League. Huge game. Because it's going to take a lot, but we can still get out this group. We can still qualify. All we've got to do is win our next three.
Well, and PSV Inter is a big game as well. You see what they did to us. There's a lot of permutations of this.
Yeah.
It's a massive... And one of the reasons it's a massive game is because we need to win, and we've got the mentality where we should win, but we don't... We know it won't necessarily happen. So we've got to go... It's a really interesting psychological battle.
I think for us as well, looking at it, and without sounding negative with it, I think it's unlikely we're going to get out of the group now, but I want us to be going for the Europa League spot. I don't want us to finish bottom and have no European football. Mm-hmm. Like, Europa League's another trophy that's feasible for us to win. It's another route into the Champions League. It's better to be in it than to not be in it, surely. Yeah. If you get to a point in March, April time where you're in the Europa League and all of a sudden you're competing for the Premier League title, fine, then you can deprioritise it. But at the moment, it's better to be in as much as we can. Yeah. Obviously, I want us to get out of the group and be in the Champions League. Of course I do. But I think it's going to take a lot. Having said that, I do think we'll beat PSV tomorrow night. They're not a great side. We should have comfortably taken the 3 points in the away game.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that, you know, we've got a fit enough squad and everybody's recovered. Yeah. And he'll rotate it again, of course he will, because he has to. But hopefully we have enough to get over the line. And I think we will, because I don't think PSV are a great side.
We battered them. Like, we made some really stupid errors, but we destroyed them away. It's almost an arrogance point where we took our foot off the petrol.
Yeah.
The gas.
Yeah.
And
for American listeners.
For our septics. I've been quite negative about the Americans. I've got nothing against Americans. It's just happened that way.
I'm the same about the Welsh. So
everyone is the same about the Welsh.
So we've got that. So hopefully we can get over the line tomorrow. And then
prediction. We're we going to do 3-0. I'm going 3-0.
2-1.
3-0. Easy.
I think I could see them nicking something. Yeah. Set play or something. And then we have Palace at the weekend, which London derby, another tough league game. They're a decent side, Palace. I don't think that their league position necessarily is fair. They've played a lot of the top sides. I watched them against Chelsea at the weekend, and they were level for, you know, up until about 60 minutes in that game.
Is it home or away?
It's away.
That's a tough game.
Yeah. But it is the normally when you play Palace, if you stop Zaha, you do stop Palace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Townsend's always one where you just always think he's going to pop up and score against us. But they don't have much in their armoury apart from Zaha.
Yeah.
But stopping Zaha is easier said than done. He's a good... I'd like him. I think he's a great player.
Yeah, I've always said really good. He's inconsistent, but I like him. Just get him in.
Yeah. And your prediction for that game?
My prediction is it will be tough. Like, it's one of those ones where... What the worst thing to be happen, we go 2-0 up and then have one goal against us with 20 minutes to go, because that crowd will get out and get on, and we just need to do it. I think we'll win 2-1.
I think for me the first goal in that game is huge against Palace, because if they get it, they sit back, they're tight, they play Zaha and Townsend on the counter and they can hurt you. So I think if we get the first goal, I could see us going on and win it, but I could probably see us dropping points there, and that might be a draw, that one.
I want to smash a team. Yeah. We haven't smashed anyone. City just got their third six goal haul, and they've scored five twice. Obviously, they scored three times.
Unbelievable. City.
You seen that clip of them just passing the ball around the opposition penalty area?
Taking the mick. You know when you watch a game in real life and your team loses, so you're angry, so then you load FIFA up, put it on the lowest difficulty possible, set up against that team and just smash them.
Yeah.
That's what they do in real life.
It's ridiculous. I want to do that somewhere. We haven't done it in a long time.
But we'll see. It'd be a tough game, Palace. It always never an easy game, that. Yeah. Crowd up.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I think it might be a draw. It's time for We Are Tottenham Hotspur quiz.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur.
Oh, God. Yeah.
So, Quizmaster Simon Mitchell wrote in as usual this, so thanks again, Simon. So, this is PSV 0, Tottenham Hotspur 1, the UEFA Cup second leg, March the 12th.
I am not doing this.
2008. Do you remember this
2008.
Game? Do you remember this game? This is the game where.
When was it? March?
March 2008. Gomez on penalties for PSV.
I was doing my. I was doing my degree. So, this was like. Do you want another story about this?
Go on then.
It's not that good.
Well, you've sold it.
Thanks very much. They messed
How
up
many
my...
people have just turned off?
Well, all two of them. They messed up my timetable, so I had to do, instead of doing two modules, I did one module and three, so I had 50% more work in my, like, and it, you know, the last year of uni is hard, but I had 50% more work, so much, and I got through it so well, and my dad was having heart attacks at the same time, and my missus was in France. I literally didn't leave my room. I used to get internet shot, it doesn't matter, I was drinking a lot of martini, a lot of martini, and I was so stressed. I didn't do anything. I didn't leave my room. My friends went to the library for me. I just couldn't do it. So I can't remember anything apart from I can talk about film studies all day.
Well, that tees us up lovely for this then, doesn't it? Yeah, this is going to go well. So do you remember the game? So
literally not at all.
It's when it goes to penalties and Gomez.
I remember
that's
the, goal that's the reason we bought Gomez.
Right. So that. 2008.
Yeah.
So we're playing 4-4-2. So our goalkeeper's Paul Robinson. Right back, Pascal Chimbonda. Left back, Lee Young-pyo. Centre halves, Ledley King and question mark.
Yeah.
Right hand side of midfield, Jermaine Genus.
Oh.
It says it all, doesn't it? Left hand side, question mark. Centre midfield is Tom Huddleston and a question mark. And then I need both strikers as well.
So not too many of them. Right then, so let's do the centre back. Not Cabal. It's
Wasn't
too early
Cabal,
for
no.
Cabal.
This was the
It's not too early for Dawes, but I don't think it's Dawes.
It's not Dawes. This is the pair that we had for not a long period during this, but which is solid.
Don't say stuff like that because it makes me feel like an idiot. Give me a clue.
Squad number 39.
Oh my god. No.
Johnny Woodgate.
Johnny Woodgate, of course it's Jonathan Woodgate.
Johnny Woodgate. Woodgate
final,
and King, what a partnership that is.
That was great.
What a partnership. So I need the centre midfielder and the left hand side
along
midfielder.
With Tommy Huddleston.
Yeah.
In 2008.
Yeah. We mentioned him at the top of the show when we were talking about kits and the brown kit.
Sakura.
Didier Sakura.
There's a brilliant video of him kicking racism out of football on YouTube. Look for it.
Literally
kicking racism out.
Left hand side of midfield.
Staltieri.
Nope. French.
I can see it. I can't name him. Who is it?
Steed.
Yeah, that's what I meant. That's who I meant.
Steve Malbronk.
I promise you, that's who I actually meant.
Steve Malbronk.
Underrated. At least if you go back, he scored actually quite a lot of useful goals for
he
us.
He did a job.
That's who I meant. I didn't mean Staltieri. I meant
Steve Malbronk. And then the
it's
two
up front. Defoe.
Nope.
No.
Not Defoe.
Bent.
No. He does come on in the game. Come on. These are the two forwards. This was the centre forward partnership that we had in this era. Number 10, number 9. One of them used to do cartwheels. The other went up north.
Oh. Keane.
Robbie Keane.
Went up north.
Berbatov.
Oh, God, yeah.
Berbatov.
See, this is why I hate this game. It's
that,
so obvious when you know the answers.
That side was Paul Robertson in goal, Chimbonda, Woodgate, King and Lee, back four. Genus, Huddleston, Zakora, Malbronk in midfield. Keane and Berbatov up front. We won that game 1-0 and it went to penalties. So we won away. We'd lost at home.
Oh, yeah.
Bonus round.
Are you having a laugh?
Which seven players took penalties?
I'm not even playing.
I'll give you the player. You tell me if they scored or if they missed. So, okay. Dimitar Berbatov scored. To the first one. He did score. Second, Jamie O'Hara.
Gee.
Off the bed.
Missed.
He scored.
Oh, yeah.
Tom Huddleston.
Scored.
Darren Bent.
Missed.
Scored. We scored four. Then we had a penalty to win it. Jermaine Genus.
Oh, well, obviously, yeah.
Gomez saved.
Yeah.
Didier Zakora then came up in sudden death. scored.
Yeah.
And then seventh, Pascal Chimbonda.
Wow.
And missed. And that was how we went out. And then we signed Gomez after that. And the rest is sort of history. Unbelievable.
Well, I feel like an idiot after that.
Fantasy football update. Just a quick one. You're still not in the league because...
I didn't do it this year.
Not got enough about you to do it. That's fine. That's fair enough.
Other things in my life.
So Richard Healy, James Lamont, 1 and 2. There's been a change in the top three though. Holiday Dan has dropped down to fifth.
Oh, man.
And Matt Downey has now gone into the top three.
Well,
so
done, Matt.
There you go. Keep it up, Matt. I'm in fourth doing the Spurs, just, you know, consolidating the Champions League spaces. Hot Tossy Trilogy, Abbas, who was meant to be coming on today, but has just, I'm not sure what he's doing.
He's working, apparently.
Allegedly. Got a few listener questions to finish.
Yes, I like these.
Sam Diggins on Facebook has said,
"All right, Sam.
Two Spurs players move into houses either side of you. Who would you like them to be?"
Lloris and Eriksen.
Because...
Actually, I don't want Lloris ding in my car.
Well... Stato said on Facebook he would not want Lloris because every time he's heading towards his house, she'd go come launching out of his and take him
all
out.
All of the jokes. I just, the one thing I hate is people hearing other people in the house, and I just think they'd both be quite quiet. I know they've both got young kids, but I don't think they'd be playing loud music. Like, I just imagine Sissoko, I imagine Danny Rowe.
Aurier.
Be an absolute nightmare. Yeah. Delhi. Imagine Delhi.
But I think Lloris, the front of his house would just be four of empty beer bottles, wouldn't it? And wine bottles.
Rosé bottles. Yeah. He's a classy bird.
So that'd be
nice. Who would you have?
If you're going down the route of who would be a nice neighbour, I think Ben Davis would be quite a nice neighbour. He'd just go about his business. I don't even think you'd know he's there.
Is he from Swansea, though?
You wouldn't even know he was there, I don't think, Ben Davis. And then you'd want somebody that's maybe a little bit, that can maybe bring a little bit of culture to you. And, you know, you could be friends with someone, Fernando Llorente.
I was thinking that.
I feel like he'd be a good cook.
Yeah, but tapas is shit, isn't it? I hate
quite
tapas.
Like it.
It's just little food.
He'd always have people over Llorente as well, I feel. There's always been family.
Me.
See, I
parking
quite like that.
Parking out front outside my house. Thing is, I don't have. I've only got one next door neighbour.
Drove the other one out. He's gone, moved out. Thanks for that, Sam.
Yeah, that was good, Sam.
John Dawkes has said, "I feel on current form that Eric Lamella is Spurs' best player. Are the echoes of Glory Team in agreement that currently he should replace Dele in the first team lineup?"
Tell you what, I got wrong was that when we had Jay here, was that Lamella should only be an impact substitute. He's more than proved me wrong, and I love the fact that he can start and dominate and be a sub and dominate. I can't disagree, because you can't. It used to be, you know, it used to be like Vertonghen or the rare old Eriksen were the best players. Mm. And I will always say Eriksen is the most influential, but Lamella is changing games. Mm. He really is.
I think he definitely at the minute is a starter. I would not be starting him over Dele Alli. For me, the three behind Kane is Eriksen, Alli, Lamella. I feel like Lamella's got ahead of Lucas, got ahead of Son.
Yeah.
If it was a case of Lamella or Alli, I'd have Alli all day. I just think we look such a better side.
Do you think there's an argument to only play to play Son and, or to always to prioritise playing Son and Moura together to have a really attacking wing? Because otherwise it's lopsided.
The thing is, they say that, don't they? That, oh, Son and Lucas, and, you know, you've got Whip, but neither of them are really wingers. In my opinion, a lot of them, I can't really recall Lucas Moura picking the ball up on the touchline and literally skinning a fullback.
Yeah, there's not many of them anyway.
He always picks the ball. They both, Son and Lucas, like to get into central areas, as does Lamella. I don't think Son's had a fantastic season so far, so I think Lamella's definitely ahead of him.
I mean, he's played a lot of the World Cup and the games at his hometown.
But great question there, John, as well.
Yeah, love
and
that.
Lastly, Hannick.
Oh, I love Hannick.
We haven't heard from Hannick for ages, so it's great to hear from you, Hannick. What is more stressful?
Come back on, Hannick.
What is more stressful than watching us give away two penalties with 10 minutes left? I can't think of anything.
What's the most stressed I've been during football?
It doesn't even necessarily have to be football. What's more stressful? I mean, the thought of being in a empty, dark room with Abbas. That the thought of that terrifies me probably
just
more than
a whistling as it swings around. But the going through the piercing. But the I get emotionally involved in sport because it doesn't matter. Like, I'm quite dead on the inside in some ways, and so, like, work, I try and keep emotionless, so things don't stress me out as much because, you know, you have to be level-headed. Whereas football, because it doesn't matter, I choose to be emotionally involved in it. So actually, like, the day Spurs beat City 4-1, do you remember they went, and yeah, Kane got his first goals of the season.
Clinton and G off the bench,
that goal. That was amazing. That was the same day as Wales beating England in the Rugby World Cup. I had nothing left by the end of that day. Like, I was more drained than any day I've ever had at work. And so stress is sport for me. So like, when Wales were 2-1 up against Belgium, and Belgium were battering us in Euro 2016, after, if you don't remember it, go and have a look at how Robson Carney's goal.
Sam brilliant header as well, doesn't he?
In like the 85th minute, and we are going through then. But that was really, it's stuff like that is when people are just battering you.
I feel like watching it is, like, imagine knowing what's going on with Spurs Wolves, but not being able to watch it.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? That's more stressful for me.
I was hosting my old neighbours. Yeah. Not Lewis, but I was hosting my old neighbours, and I literally rewatched the game the following morning. Yeah. So that's how I know. Yeah. But it was awful because I was like, oh my God, it's a penalty. And we were drinking brandy, you know?
What has happened to you?
I've turned old in middle class, mate.
Yeah, you've turned old. But brilliant questions there. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks,
so, big week ahead. Let's hope we can get a couple of victories. And whatever happens, future's bright, future's lily white. Come on, you Spurs.
I always thought there was very, very many people interested in football, and I always thought that football was a very important game, but I never realised until today just how important it is.
Whether the Wonder Boys of White Hart Lane are or are not the team of the century can't possibly be more than a matter of opinion.
Well, they're the finest team in Great Britain and one of the best in the world.
We are about the glory of the game. We are about playing with style. We are Tottenham Hotspur. The curve of the ball, the billow of the net, the beating of the trap and the picking of the lock, the swiftness of thought, the lightness of touch. We are Ginola, Greaves, Klinsmann. We are the collective gasp, the intake of breath, the flick, the trick, the 30-yard free kick. We are Hoddle, Mabbott and King. We are the lob, the chip, the dummy and the volley. We are the hat trick, the scissor kick. We are Bill Nick.
That is schoolboy's own stuff.
We are the outside of the boot, the inside of the net, and those seconds that last forever.
Van der Vaart to level it up. Raphael van der Vaart, 2-2! It's quite a game, isn't it always?
We are Jennings, Defoe and Perryman. Glory past, glory future. What was, what is, what's next? We are Blanchflower, Ardiles and Bale. We are about winning with a flourish. We are about winning with style. We are about the glory of the game. Daring to try, daring to risk, daring to dream. To dare is to do.